Good morning, and welcome to this press briefing on the UN World Population Prospects, the 2012 revision. Here to brief us is Mr. John Wilmuth, Director of the Population Division of the UN Department of Economic and Social Affairs, or UNDESA. And he's joined on his right by Mr. Francois Pelletier, Chief of the Population Estimates and Projections Section in the Population Division. And Mr. Wilmuth will present the revision's key findings, and then both of our guests will take your questions afterwards as time allows. So I'll turn it over to Mr. Wilmuth.
Thank you, Pragati. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm grateful for the opportunity to address you here today. Let me begin by acknowledging the staff members of the Population Division who have produced the work being released today, the Population Estimates and Projections section, many of whom are present here today, has worked very hard to finalize these numbers and to assure their accuracy under the very able leadership of Mr. Francois Pelletier, to my right, and his predecessor, Mr. Gerhard Heilig. Every 2 years, the United Nations makes an assessment of past, current, and future population trends. This analysis is published in a recurrent series known as the World Population Prospects. Today, we are presenting you with the latest in this series, which includes data for 233 countries and areas of the world. The world's population is now estimated at around 7.2 billion. By 2025, there could be 8.1 billion people on this planet, and by 2050, as many as 9.6 billion. Trends in future population will be affected by the trajectories of its three major components, fertility, mortality, and migration, but especially by the future course of fertility. For the world as a whole, fertility has fallen rapidly in recent decades, especially since the 1960s. Several large developing countries, including China, India, Indonesia, Iran, Brazil, South Africa, and many others, have experienced a rapid fall in the average number of children per woman. This has led to a reduction in population growth rates in much of the developing world. At the same time, many countries of Europe, East Asia, and elsewhere now have very low levels of fertility, well below their replacement level of around 2.1 children per woman. As a result, these populations are aging rapidly and face challenges in providing care and support to their growing ranks of older persons. Some of these countries have seen their populations begin to decrease in recent years. There remains, however, a group of countries with relatively high levels of fertility, more than 5 children per woman on average. Most of these are on the UN's list of 49 least developed countries, and many are located in sub-Saharan Africa. For example, Nigeria, Niger, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Ethiopia, and Uganda, but also Afghanistan and Timor-Leste. For these populations, growth is rapid today, and rapid growth is expected to continue over the next few decades. As new data become available, the Population Division works to incorporate that information in our work. This latest analysis takes into account new data from the 2010 round of population censuses and from recent sample surveys. Compared to the UN's assessment of 2 years ago, our new projections of future population have been revised upward. For comparison, our medium variant projection of world population in the year 2050 has increased from 9.3 to 9.6 billion, and for 2100 from 10.1 to 10.9 billion. Most of this increase is due to changes in our estimates of current fertility for several high fertility countries, and especially the impact of those current estimates on our projections of future fertility levels. Recently available data and other information have obliged us to revise upwardly our estimates of current fertility levels for several high fertility countries, including Angola, Cameroon, DR Congo, Ethiopia, Mozambique, Niger, and Nigeria. Our medium variant projection continues to assume a rapid fall in future levels of fertility for these countries. We continue to calibrate the pace of future fertility decline using the historical experience of countries that underwent a major reduction of fertility levels after 1950 in an era of modern contraception. The medium variant projection is thus an expression of what should be possible if future patterns of behavioral change in childbearing resemble those of the past for populations at similar levels of fertility. These future trends, however, are not guaranteed. In fact, in light of some recent trends for certain high fertility countries, this middle scenario could require additional substantial efforts to make it possible. Governments have consistently emphasized the need to enable individuals and couples to choose freely the number and the timing of any children they may wish to have. What it means to enable individuals to achieve their desired family size is broader now than even 20 years ago. In many countries today, the achieved fertility level is substantially lower than what individuals desire. While in other countries, there is an unmet need for access to modern methods of contraception for the purpose of limiting family size or managing the timing of births. In low fertility countries, governments have tried to find ways of supporting women and men, both at home and at work, so that they can combine their desired level of childbearing with work outside the home. In high fertility countries, on the other hand, governments have focused on improving opportunities for education and employment, especially for youth, and on providing access to family planning and a broad array of sexual and reproductive health services. Even though demography is not destiny, these new population estimates and projections highlight the pressures that some governments are facing now and will continue to face in the future with regard to population growth in some cases, and population aging and even possible decline in others. Let me finish by mentioning our website, unpopulation.org, where you can find a wealth of detailed information for your country or region of interest. Also note that selected indicators for all countries, including estimates of total population size, life expectancy at birth, and the total fertility rate, are included in the handouts that were distributed earlier. Finally, I thank you for your interest, and I would welcome any questions that you may have at this point.
Thanks. We'll take your questions if you can identify your name and your media affiliation. And just to remind you to use your microphones and to press the buttons on your microphones. Yes.
Thank you very much. My name is Yasusawa from Kyodo News. This is Japan's news wire service. On behalf of United Nations Correspondent Association, I would like to ask a question on, you referred something like three conditions on this scenario, on the prediction, like fertility, mortality, and something like that. So what do you think? How likely do you think this prediction is come true? And so what do you think is the toughest challenge to avoid the worst scenario, which was described in your report, like developing countries population is exploding like as much as 27.5 billion?
27.5 billion, I'm not sure where that number comes from. But let me state in general, you mentioned, we talk about the medium variant scenario of our projections, but there's also a high and a low. And we always try to emphasize that there is, in fact, a great deal of uncertainty about the future of population trends. We put forward a middle scenario, this medium variant projection, as we call it, which is based on an extrapolation of historical trends. In other words, it's based on an assumption that in some ways the future will resemble the past. The kinds of changes that took place for high fertility countries in recent decades could be repeated by other high fertility countries in future decades. And based on that kind of assumption and assuming that the future resembles the past, that's how we come up with our projection that we might reach 9.6 billion people on the planet in 2050. However, it's important to realize that there's a range of estimates. We don't think that that single estimate is the most likely scenario. It's one of a range of scenarios. And in fact, our high projection, our high variant projection, has population growing to 10.9 billion people in 2050, whereas the low variant has the world growing to 8.3. Now, that's a range of about 2.6 billion from high to low. So there's substantial uncertainty even about the middle of this century. By the end of the century in 2100, the range between the high estimate and the low estimate is from 16.6 billion to 6.8 billion, or almost 10 billion in terms of the range of uncertainty that we're expressing. In other words, we want to underline that we really don't know what these trends will be after a period of several decades. Within the first few decades, we can have some certainty about these projections. For example, by 2050, everyone who will be alive in 2050 above the age of 37 has already been born. So we know at least how large those groups were at birth. And we just need to age them forward and make some projection about how many will live. And so the uncertainty in 2050 is what will happen to births between now and then. And there is substantial uncertainty. Will fertility remain at the same high levels where we now find it in many countries? Will it decline? We make a projection of decline, like I say, based on past experience. Whether that will come true, we really can't know. There is enormous uncertainty, especially beyond a few decades.
I would like to remind you my second question, how to what is the toughest challenge to avoid the worst scenario? And you certainly underlined the necessity of a family plan or something like that. So what is the toughest challenge of that?
I think there are two worst case scenarios. And since you are from Japan, I will emphasize that there's not only a risk of rapid growth for some countries, there's a risk of population decline for some countries. And so many countries have very low levels of fertility. And this presents challenges as well. If low fertility is maintained over many years, then populations age very rapidly. The average age goes up. The percentage of the population above age 65 rises very rapidly. And eventually, the population may start to decrease in size. The shift of the population age distribution to older ages, this is potentially problematic because of support arrangements between the generations. Financial support arrangements, providing health care and pensions for older populations can be challenging in that situation. On the other side, of course, is the concern about rapid growth in high fertility countries. And this then raises concerns about the sustainability of those populations, the ability to feed the populations, and to provide a standard of living that would be considered acceptable. I'm not saying that either of these challenges on one side or the other are impossible to meet. In fact, the world has had a great experience of dealing with rapid population growth. World population doubled between 1960 and 2000, roughly. World food supply more than doubled over that time period. We have been successful in the past in addressing concerns around rapid population growth by feeding the population in particular. However, that will be challenging moving forward to continue that pace of increase in food production. Likewise, it will be challenging for countries like Japan that are watching their populations age so rapidly. So the problem is more one of extremes. It's not that there's a perfect population profile. It's the main story is to avoid the extremes of either rapid growth due to high fertility or rapid population aging and potential decline due to very low fertility.
Yes.
Where is it? Sorry about that. Okay, Evelyn Leopold, have you had a study on the high fertility and child brides? Because I can't see them. There seems to be a large number of child brides in certain countries, at which point they will have absolutely nothing to say about contraception, as they had nothing to say about their marriage.
Well,
and secondly, what did Indonesia or India do to lower their birth rate?
Okay, so two questions. First on child brides. There is a concern about early marriage in many countries of the world, and there are laws that in some cases allow for marriage at young ages, and in other cases there are laws that are not enforced, and therefore in reality people are marrying at very young ages. And this is certainly a concern, not only from the standpoint of population growth, because when people start reproducing younger in life, then they tend to have more children over the course of a lifetime. That's simple to understand. But there are also, of course, concerns about what this does in terms of the opportunities for young people. It's an important component of addressing future concerns about population growth, addressing this issue that you raise. It's something that many countries are attempting to do, but I'm afraid it's an issue that sometimes may be lost. And I think it's good for you to raise it and to keep the world aware of this as an important aspect. This has an impact on many levels. Encouraging young people to marry later and to stay in school then allows them to develop human capital and skills that allow them to be successful in the labor market. This then encourages smaller family size because people are actively engaged in education and employment. And it improves their lives in many ways across the board. Your other question about Indonesia, India, I can't remember exactly the countries you mentioned. Those countries have, for many decades, been actively trying to encourage their populations to have smaller families. But they've done it, for the most part, by providing access to family planning services. This is, I think, the right approach that countries have found that when they enable couples to have the number of children that they would like, when they would like them, couples, individuals tend to respond in a way that reduces the population fertility rate.
Thank you very much. Edith Lederer from the Associated Press. Two questions also. You say that compared to the UN's previous assessment of world population trends, the new projected total population is higher, particularly after 2075. Could you give us those figures from the previous projection to the current one and tell us why? And secondly, as for the United States, you say that much of the overall increase between now and 2050 is going to be in high fertility countries, mainly in Africa, as well as countries with large populations, including the United States. And then you say that the U.S. is also in the largest low fertility countries.
That's a very good question. Let me try to answer the first one first. We have lots of data, of course, to compare the previous projections to the current ones, but let me just focus on one number, or two numbers. The projections for 2050 for the world increased from 9.3 billion to 9.6 billion between the previous assessment and the current one. And the projection, the medium variant projection for the world in 2100 has gone up from 10.3 billion to 10.9 billion. So this is a rather substantial increase. Am I correct with those numbers, Francois? Okay. Oh, 10.1 to 10.9. Yeah, that's correct. So, so this is a substantial change. The main cause of this difference is a revision of our evaluation of current fertility levels in several high fertility countries and the impact that that has not only on population growth in the present, but also on growth over future decades. In other words, for many high fertility countries, in particular in sub-Saharan Africa, back in the 1990s, there was an increasing body of evidence to suggest that fertility levels had begun to fall, and that fertility seemed to be falling really around the world. However, in the last 10 years, the decline that seemed to be starting back in the 1990s appears to have stalled to some degree in several high fertility countries. So as a result, we have to take that information into account, obviously, and revise our current estimates of fertility. And then when we make projections of the future, they have to start from the current level. And since the current level is now higher than what we thought it would be 10 years ago, or even a few years ago, the projections over future decades are also higher than what we had been projecting in the past. So it's mainly due to a revision of our estimates of fertility for recent years, but that has an impact on our projections of what will happen in future years because the future trends have to emerge from the current levels. Your second question about the U.S. is very perceptive, I would say, because you're wondering how could it be the case that the U.S. is going to contribute so much to world population growth and yet it's a low fertility country. So that's a very good point. Well, there are a couple of things to be said. One is that it is a low fertility country just barely. That's to say we have a cutoff point of 2.1 children per woman, and the United States falls just below that. The total fertility rate has been around 2 children per woman. So compared to other countries in that group, it has relatively high fertility. Another point that's important is that we project a continuation of current levels of immigration to the country, and therefore the country is growing as a result of immigration. And that is part of the U.S. share of total world population growth, even though you might just say those people are being redistributed from other countries to the United States, so maybe in that sense the U.S. isn't contributing. But if we count the migration, that's what pulls it up, even though it's a low fertility country. Is that accurate? Is that an accurate explanation, Francois? Thank you. Tuyen,
you had a question. Yes, you just push the button on the microphone.
Oh, okay, thank you. Tuyen Nguyen from the German press agency, DPR. Can you go to the list of total population at the Holy See? It lists 1,000 people. But when you go to the category male and female, it says zero male, zero female. Does it explain there's no sex in the Holy See or what?
I'll let Francois answer that.
It's because
turn your microphone on.
It's because the table is in per thousand, so whatever is below 1,000 appears as zero.
Oh, it's zero. Well, I don't know how I can do the story, but anyway. my second question is...
On the website, the data will be available with the 3 digits.
Microphone, we need to... Thank you.
In the same list, many countries have more female than male. I wonder if you can give us an idea of what the world will be in 2050. Is this a world with more female than male? You know, China has a problem of more men than women. In the U.S., there are more women than men, and it's the trend in many countries. What it will be in 2050 or beyond 2050, is this a world with more women than men? Is there a statistic that can help explain the trend?
Well, I think the basic explanation is that as a phenomenon of biology, there tend to be more male births than female births. It's a ratio of about 105 male births for every 100 female births, and that's kind of a product of biology. So in all populations, we start off at birth with more men, but then mortality tends to be higher for men than for women, and that starts at age zero. Once they're out of the womb, we start with more boys, but then they start dying off more rapidly. In almost all countries of the world, this is true. It's only in areas of the world where there's kind of explicit discrimination against women where you find higher levels of female mortality for a given age. So in most populations, you start off with more men at birth, but by a certain age, the men have been dying off more rapidly, the boys and men have been dying off more rapidly, and then you have more women. And at older ages, in most populations, you tend to have more women because of the lower mortality, the greater survival for women. So this is not an uncommon thing. We observe it around the world, and the increased proportion of women in the population is mostly due to the fact that at older ages there's been this increased survival that's favored women much more than men. And in most of the countries with very high levels of life expectancy, there's a large age gap between men and women in the level of life expectancy. And so the increased feminization of the population is especially due to what's happening at older ages. There is another phenomenon related to differences in the sex ratio at birth in some countries due to selective use of abortion to affect boy births and girl births. This happens in a few countries. It's completely unpredictable. From my standpoint, I can't tell you where that's going to go. That is part of what has created the phenomenon in China of what some people say is an excess of boys. But, you know, over time, that could correct itself as well. Sociologists have written about this topic many years ago, saying that if the sex balance between men and women ever gets too far out of balance, if the ratio of male to female ever gets too far out of balance, that society would introduce various correction mechanisms. For example, you can marry people at different ages. You can marry somebody older or younger. Or women may become, in some sense, more valuable when they are less common in the population. And this might then change people's behaviors in the future because they might see that, in fact, girls would be perceived as more valuable because of the shortage of women of marriageable age. And this might affect people's behaviors for the future. So this is all just entirely speculative about what will happen in the future. I expect that overall the balance between men and women that has always existed in human populations will continue. More boys at birth, more women at older ages, with a crossover somewhere in between.
Hmm. Yes.
Yong Il Shin, Korea Times. For certain countries, like Republic of Korea, the fertility rate trend has been trending down, and then it's expected to rise. So that goes contrary to the world. So what factors were considered to actually project for it to fall and then rise? And the second part is what are the most influencing factor on the fertility rate, the changes on the fertility rate for a specific country, in general, I guess. Yeah.
Okay, the first question is more specific, and I can answer it easily. For our trend, the trends in fertility that we use for our projections are based on historical experiences of countries. And that's true both for the high fertility and for the low fertility countries. So for high fertility countries, we look at other countries that had high levels of fertility, and we look at the rate of decline that happened in the past for countries that were at those high levels of fertility. But then we also observe what happens for low fertility countries, because several countries have had fertility rates below 2 children per woman already for several decades. And so we observe, again, what happens in those countries. And what we've observed in many cases is that after a fall of fertility to very low levels, there tends to be a recovery. There tends to be this pattern of, for countries that fall to very low levels of fertility, that's to say maybe 1.1, 1.2 children per woman. I don't remember the exact number for the Republic of Korea in recent years, but I think it's down in that range of 1.2, 1.3 children per woman. And yet our expectation, based on the experience of other countries that perhaps went through that experience a little bit earlier, is that there will be some kind of recovery. Because I think, you know, you're asking then what determines all of this? And that's a huge question. I can't answer it all here in 30 seconds. But I can tell you, for example, that this phenomenon of fertility falling to very low levels and then recovering and going back up, it's what I would say that it's a kind of learning process. That as countries go through a process of industrialization and development of market economies and increased labor force participation of women, fertility tends to fall for all of these reasons. And it becomes, in fact, difficult for people to have kids and to combine work with childbearing. And as they learn to do this and they institute systems, for example, a flexible working arrangement or childcare services that help parents manage the job of work and family at the same time, it becomes possible then to raise fertility and for people to have the number of children that they desire. I think that in some of these countries where people are only having one or 1.1 children on average, that's less than what many of the couples would actually want. But through this learning process over time, that those levels may recover and they may go back up, as has happened in some other countries.
In the back, if you could use your microphone. We can't hear you very well.
I said, I'm wondering if you would like to share your insightful views with us about the link between your population projections and the UN efforts for sustainable development.
Thank you. The population question has been a topic at the UN for a very long time. And you know, going back to the 1950s and even before, that people started to become concerned about this. And it was a question about sustainability. Sustainability questions are not new, is my first point. Concern about whether the world could sustain the kind of population growth that was anticipated even 50 or 60 years ago, there was a great deal of concern about this. That continues today, and population is definitely an important part of the issue of sustainable development. however, I think a couple of points are important. First, there's been an emphasis. Governments have emphasized the right of people to choose the number of children that they would like to have, to choose the number and the timing of the children. And so in that sense, there are limited opportunities for government intervention to affect population trends. The most that governments can do is enable people to have the number of children that they have. I can't say that's the most that they can do, but most governments have affirmed that that is the best approach, is to enable people. And but by doing that, individuals typically have chosen to reduce their birth rate, and that can play a positive role in addressing issues of sustainable development. However, like I say, the policy options are somewhat limited. And therefore, it's important to plan for future population growth. It's important to see it as a kind of a warning signal that we need to accelerate efforts to find ways to live that are more sustainable over time, because the 7 billion people on the planet today are not going away. I mean, that number is unlikely to fall substantially. And the reality is that we have a sustainability issue, an issue about the sustainability of our economic consumption and production. We have that sustainability issue whether we have 7 billion people on this planet or 10 billion or 4 billion. We still have a sustainability problem no matter what. And therefore, the solution is not probably through controlling population growth. The solution has to come through changing the ways that we live. We can help the situation to some degree by, like I say, enabling people to have to choose the number and the timing of the children that they wish to have. But we have limited ability to fix this problem through population trends.
We're over a half hour. Matthew, quick question.
Sure. Thanks a lot. Matthew Lee, Inner City Press, on behalf of the Free UN Coalition for Access, thanks for doing this. I wanted to ask about in your report on, I see, I mean, it's on page 38, but generally you have these projections for lowest life expectancy at birth, and you're going into the future. You're saying, you know, for 2045, Sierra Leone will still be number, you know, the least, the lowest life expectancy, and that's also projected for 2095. Then you have some kind of jostling among, they're almost all African countries, and some go up and some go down. I'm just wondering, given the UN actually has programs in some of these countries, how did you arrive at the idea, for example, that Sierra Leone will remain the lowest life expectancy? And also just on this question of policy options, Myanmar has said that, and you've presented it as sort of countries can decide to either bring up population or try to bring it down through various policies. But in Myanmar, they're basically trying to bring down the Muslim population, at least in one area of the country, by saying two children are the limit, and bring up the non-Muslim population. So what do you think of that? I mean, have you seen that elsewhere, where a country, rather than having a uniform policy for everyone within its borders, tries to actually affect the balance of particular groups? And what would be your comment on that? Thanks.
Well, the first question about life expectancy at birth in various countries, we make projections for all countries individually. There is, just like there's uncertainty at the global level, there's a great deal of uncertainty at the individual country level. And so, you know, the precise ranking of any particular country, especially when we're talking about decades into the future, is highly uncertain. And honestly, as you asked the question, I'm not sure we should even be emphasizing the ranking of countries on life expectancy at the end of this century, maybe currently and within the next few decades. In fact, we've really tried to emphasize these projections out to about 2050, and we try not to overemphasize the projections beyond that point. So I would encourage you also to focus on what's happening in the present and over the next few decades. As far as your second question about different fertility policies for different population subgroups, I really am not familiar with the situation that you're describing in Myanmar. I believe that such policies have existed in other countries as well at certain times, but I'm really not an expert in this, and I wouldn't really want to comment on any particular choice that a government makes about how it wishes to manage its population issues. I've really just emphasized that in UN conferences and other fora, governments have affirmed the importance of enabling people to act responsibly and according to their own wishes.
Yes.
Thank you. Hi, Sherman Brice-Pease, South African Broadcasting. I wanted to just ask about the sub-Saharan example. You spoke about a decline in the average fertility rates in the 90s, and then over the last 10 years, you say you guys are seeing a spike, an increase. What is that? What was that initial decline born out of, excuse the pun? And in within that category, you have South Africa that seems to be steadily declining in terms of average rates. What's that? The cause of that?
I think I missed one word in the start of your presentation, but you were your question. You were asking about the country, the stall of the fertility decline in sub-Saharan
in the
African
90s,
countries.
Yeah.
Well, let me preface this answer by saying that there is a great deal of uncertainty in these matters. We gather all the data that are available, mostly from sample surveys. These are not countries that have complete, well-functioning vital registration systems. It's not the case that every birth gets registered in these high-fertility countries, as happens in the United States and Europe and many countries of the world. We've made an important push to increase birth registration around the world, but there are still many places where that's not true. So we have inferior forms of data based on asking women in sample surveys how many children they gave birth to in the past. And based on this information, we put it all together for a particular country, and we try to figure out what's going on. But there's a great deal of uncertainty. Now, what I was explaining earlier was that for the 1990s, in many African countries of sub-Saharan Africa, it appeared, based on the data that were becoming available at that time, that fertility had started to fall. And many people, I think, breathed a sigh of relief because it seemed that then the fertility decline was starting in this area of the world as well. And that seemed to be, you know, kind of what people had been wishing might happen. Why did it begin? At the time, there was a lot of discussion about increasing education of children, increasing access to family planning services, and also a cultural change in some sense, because the idea of smaller families had been introduced and had been promoted through the media and so forth. So a combination of changing lifestyles, availability of the means of contraception, and changing ideals about family size, gotten from television and other places. So these various factors seem to be coming together to lead to a reduction of fertility in sub-Saharan Africa. Why that has stalled is, I would say, even less well understood. Some people have been concerned that the money that had been directed toward family planning and reproductive health services has been diverted, in many cases, to other areas that are very valid, other areas of concern in the world of global health, such as HIV and other infectious diseases. But that the focus on family planning may have lost some of its intensity over this time. However, there's some cause for hope in that. Many of you may be aware that last summer there was an important summit in London. It's known as the London Summit, focusing on the importance of increasing availability of family planning services around the world. And there's a goal of making family planning services available to another 120 million women who currently lack access by the year 2020. So this is known as the Family Planning 2020 Initiative. So I think a lot of new attention is being directed to this issue. But we should never oversimplify the problem. It's never just a case of providing family planning services. It's also a question of empowering youth, providing them with educational and employment opportunities. Those, of course, are very important as well.
I think we have to stop. Our time's up. Perhaps our guests can take one or two questions on the side as we leave, but we have to get ready for the noon briefing. So thank you very much to our guests. A very fascinating story. Thank you.